Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
Along with Henry David Thoreau, no single person carries so much of the legacy of the American conservation movement than John Muir. We now head on up to San Francisco as the Voice of the Earth honors our National Park of the Week, Muir Woods. I want to invite Heather Booth to the Wildside News. Heather is one of the rangers at the Muir Woods National Monument. Heather, give us a picture of Muir Woods.
Well, Muir Woods is an old-growth coast redwood forest just 12 miles north of San Francisco. Lots of towering redwood trees and a lush understory in the forest as well.
And how large a park is this?
It's actually a quite small park. It's only about 550 acres, but it is surrounded by other parkland, state, national, local water districts. So it's actually a pretty wild area.
Now, of course, Muir Woods conjures up a lot of different images to different people. Certainly, we're talking about John Muir, and he has a reputation as being probably one of America's most significant conservationists and writers, and is considered by many to be one of the fathers of the modern environmental movement. Tell us how you interpret John Muir and this park.
Well, Muir Woods is in many ways a monument to his legacy. Ironically, this is one of the very few, well, I wouldn't say one of the few parks, but John Muir actually fought to protect many parks throughout the United States and actually around the world, and this is one of the parks that he didn't actually campaign individually to protect, but instead it was named in his honor because William Kent, who actually purchased this land and donated it to become a national monument, admired John Muir greatly, and it was John Muir's writings about nature and the preservation of nature that really inspired him.
It is kind of an unusual thing now because Kent was a wealthy industrial person, and
correct,
apparently this particular area became threatened with logging as the redwoods are being torn down, and this is an area of incredible redwood forest. Tell us that story.
Well, historically in California, there were about 2 million acres of redwoods, and today you still would find about 1.7 million acres of redwoods growing, but less than 3% of the old-growth, uncut forests remain today and protected in parkland. And when Kent was here at the turn of the century, he was seeing the devastation that was happening. You know, in California, there were plenty of redwoods up until about the gold rush when the population of California exploded. And really, within about 50 years, most of the trees in the Bay Area were cut down. One of the advantages this area had going for it, and at that time it was known as Redwood Valley or Sequoia Canyon alternately, and it was just really hard to get to. And, you know, some of the tallest redwoods anywhere usually grow in these really steep canyons, so it's not surprising to find the trees here. But we were just really lucky that geography protected them up until William Kent and some other local citizens could come together and start suggesting that we needed to preserve some of these trees for the future.
So when people come to Muir Woods National Monument, which is, what, about 12 miles north of San Francisco proper?
Yeah, exactly, by a very, very windy road.
That's always part of the adventure of traveling that part of the country. Beautiful, interesting realities. What is their experience going to be like?
Well, they come into our main parking lot, and then they get out of their cars. This is a walking park, and immediately after passing through our visitor center, they will enter into this old-growth redwood forest. It's like taking a step back in time. This is the kind of forest dinosaurs would have been walking through. And they'll be walking into a deep, damp, cool forest, even in the summer when it's 100 degrees in the rest of Marin County. It'll be in the 60s or maybe the 70s in here. It's often foggy during the summer, rainy during the winter. It's not to say we don't have beautiful days. I'm looking out at a gorgeous day at Muir Woods right now. But this cool, damp weather really provides the right habitat for the redwood trees and the plants and animals that the forest supports.
You're a very lucky person in the sense that you get to witness this transformation from people who perhaps have never even experienced the redwoods, and they park their car, they get out, they walk through your visitor center and look at a few exhibits and things, and then they emerge into this other world. What do you notice when people, what happens?
Well, one of the things I love about working in this particular park is that we get visitors who have never been to a national park. They've never really had that experience in nature. But even the people who have been to other parks come here, and they're just amazed that this kind of place can exist so close to a large urban area, because it's such a wilderness feel just half an hour from San Francisco. and they immediately start seeing the wildlife. Our banana slugs, which are ubiquitous in a redwood forest, just fascinate the children. It's really a wonderful thing to be able to show a slimy creature to a kid. And they just become quiet. It's interesting to me that we have a lot of rules that regulate how our visitors behave. You know, they can't take things home, they can't go off trail, etc. But we don't have any signs up that say, please be quiet. And yet you hear people speaking in hushes as they walk through the park. There's something about the forest that just makes people very respectful and very quiet. It's quite a spiritual experience for a lot of people.
Well, if people have not experienced the redwoods, it is totally unique. There is almost nothing that really compares. Certainly going to the Grand Canyon and seeing the expansive vistas and the deep, deep canyon puts things into perspective. And there's a sense of awe there, too. But there's something, as you say, sort of mystical. And I guess I knew that's the mists and the mystical are related.
Probably very much. That fog also absorbs a lot of that sound. So it's sort of part and parcel. And then, of course, there's the age of the trees. You know, redwood trees can get over 370 feet tall, so that's the visual aspect. But knowing that the trees here average about 500 to 800 years old and that they can live over 2,000 years, you know, knowing that the trees that we're walking underneath were the same trees that John Muir and William Kent walked underneath, and for that matter, that the native peoples walked under before them, these trees were growing when Columbus arrived in America. They were growing during the American Revolution. It kind of puts our lifetimes in perspective.
What do you think it was about John Muir and his writings that made such an impact on America, and particularly awakening this concept that we must conserve and preserve? He literally was a preservationist, these treasures.
Well, John Muir is a man I've always greatly admired, partially because he was so intelligent, and he was also very eloquent, very... For a person who's often described for the many treks he took on his own, climbing across the Sierra, exploring mountains, climbing trees, he was also very good at politics. He was very good at helping other people to see what he saw and convince them to help protect landscapes. You know, there's a lot of people out there who go out and explore and think the outdoors are wonderful, but very few of them can get as many articles and books published as John Muir did and have as wide a distribution. And then John Muir actually started acting on his convictions. Not only did he write these books and talk to the people he knew, he went on to establish the Sierra Club, which became a very potent political group and still remains that today. The Sierra Club's first campaign helped preserve Yosemite as a national park. Previous to that, it had been only preserved partially as a state grant. So his work just carries on today, and I think Kent really was inspired by him because Muir had done so much to convince other people about this. And Kent was also really a progressive. He felt like the private citizens, the wealthy citizens of the world, should not have exclusive access to areas like this. He felt that other people should have access to these public lands, that they really should belong to all of us.
One of the things that you interpret as well is a unique sort of panoply of players. You have Kent and you have Muir, but you also have an ancient tribute tree to a legendary conservationist. Tell that story, because this puts the modern era into perspective and some of the things that we're struggling with these days to determine our future.
Very much so. Muir Woods, one of our main themes is history of conservation, and so many things come together here. John Muir, of course, the park is named for, so that seems the most obvious. It's actually Kent and Gifford Pinchot's legacy that we're really exhibiting here. Gifford Pinchot was really the father of forestry in the United States, not necessarily in the way we think of it today, but at the turn of the century, he and John Muir, hand in hand, were saying that private lands weren't necessarily the best way to manage the natural resources of this country, and they were advocating the establishment of national parks and national forests. Pinchot went on to become the first chief of the National Forest Service, and he had also become a friend of William Kent. So when Kent was struggling to find a way to protect this park, they both together suggested that it become a national park in 1903, and they were unsuccessful. Congress simply wasn't interested. So in 1905, Kent purchased this land and tried to preserve it for the public. Unfortunately, in 1907, a local water company tried to condemn the land to build a reservoir here. And it was Gifford Pinchot who really offered up the opportunity that Kent could donate this land to the federal government, and it could become a national monument under the Antiquities Act. So Theodore Roosevelt, another great conservationist, is actually the one who proclaimed this a national monument in 1908. So these people all coming together really were, you know, the nexus of a nascent environmental movement going on. In 1914, legislation was passed to build a reservoir in Yosemite. Hetch Hetchy Reservoir now exists there. And this was really the first big fight of the environmental movement. And John Muir was fighting against it. William Kent, ironically, at that point, had become a congressman from the Bay Area and actually had co-written the legislation to create that reservoir. So all these people really played a role in the early conservation history of the United States.
And so these dynamics continue to this very day.
Mm-hmm.
They really do, particularly on public lands.
Oh, yes, very much so. We're always struggling between figuring out what natural resources we need to use, how we can use them carefully, but also what natural resources need to be set aside for their own sake. And that's one of the wonderful things about the different federal agencies we have today, having the National Park Service and the Forest Service with different missions.
Let's move it up to the current era. When people come to Muir Woods National Monument, what should they expect? How much time should they put aside, and what can they expect to do there?
I would say our average visitor spends about 45 minutes to an hour and a half here, and within that time frame, they're able to walk the majority of our main trail. Our main trail is flat, easy walking. It's paved or boardwalk, so it's ADA accessible, which means that you can come here with your family. You can have bring your grandkids in a stroller and great-grandma if she needs to use a wheelchair. We have a couple we can loan out. So it's really something for every ability. If you have those adventurous teenagers who want a long, hard hike, we have trails leading out of the canyon that are nice and steep, and they can hike for miles and miles, even to the top of the mountain above us, 2,600 feet uphill. So there's lots of opportunities. We don't allow picnicking here, which is a little bit unusual, and it's a day-use area. And that's largely because we have very high visitation. If visitors come in the summer, it can be very crowded, and we suggest that they come early in the morning and late in the afternoon. Otherwise, our parking lot's actually still up.
And you're a year-round park.
We are. We are open every single day of the year, including Christmas and New Year's Day.
That's actually quite rare.
Well, it's unusual, but what we found is that those are days that are very popular here at the park. You'd be amazed how many people want to come out on Christmas Day or on New Year's Day, and it's wonderful to see all these families. They're on Christmas Day, they're finished unwrapping all their gifts, and they want to come out and take a walk. Or on New Year's Day, they're going to start their New Year's resolution to get some exercise by coming to Muir Woods. It's a great way to start the year.
Much of the rest of the country is still in the grips of winter in one way or another, but actually along the coast in San Francisco, Northern California, this is springtime, and springtime in the Redwoods is a special time for you and your park, and as a matter of fact, you have some special activities that happen each spring.
That's right. You know, Redwood Forests, first of all, they're in a Mediterranean climate where we don't have spring so much as winter and summer. We have 6 months of the wet season and 6 months of a dry season. And it's during that wet season that the forest really comes alive. All of our trees are leafing out right now, but our first flowers started blooming in December. And that's normal every year, which means that if we want to do restoration work to help repair some of the damage we've done in the past, we need to do it during this rainy, wet season. So right now we're actually having an Earth season. Instead of the traditional Earth Day in April, we have invited large corporations, groups, individual volunteers to come out and help us remove invasive plant species or plants that we grow in our native plant nursery, help us do trail repair. There's a lot of things we can do to help make this forest healthy. We've been really lucky the last several years to have 400 or 500 volunteers come out and help us with that, and it's continuing right now.
If people are interested in assisting, can they contact you?
Yeah, they can check out our website at www.nps, as in National Park Service, .gov/muwo, or our nature hotline at 415-388-2595. And those will be able to give you information about the natural and cultural history of the park, learn about our hours, etc., and also find out who to contact for each volunteer program we have.
Now, 2005 is a very unique and special year from Muir Woods.
That's right. We are kicking off our centennial. It's incredible to think that this park has been here for so long. 1905 was the year that William Kent purchased this land and first opened it up to the public as a forest reserve for people to recreate in. So we're celebrating 100 years of preservation. And then 1908, of course, was the year that Kent Pence donated the land to the federal government and that Roosevelt declared it a national monument in honor of John Muir. So in 2008, we'll actually be celebrating the 100th-year anniversary of the national monument. One other really special thing happening this year is we're actually celebrating another coincidental anniversary. In 1945, the United Nations, during their coordinating conference in San Francisco, came to Muir Woods as part of their celebration. They actually came here for a memorial to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and this year, World Environment Day is happening in San Francisco. The United Nations is having a conference here, and once again, they're going to be coming to Muir Woods as part of their celebration, because it's places like this that can really inspire peace throughout the world.
Great concept. You know, there is a rather colorful historical element within the Muir Woods National Monument, and that is Bohemian Grove.
Yes. Bohemian Grove is one of the places where our tallest trees are. It's a beautiful spot, and the Bohemian Club in San Francisco thought so too. So in 1892, they actually chose this place to have their summer hijinks. And the Bohemian Club is world famous. When it first started out, it was artists and writers, but it very quickly became the organization for wealthy businessmen to belong to. And in 1892, they got together, built a 60-foot-tall statue of a Buddha, and had plays and celebrations here for about 2 weeks. But legend has it, it was so horribly cold and foggy and damp that they said they'd never come back here again. And so within a couple of years, they had actually purchased land up on the Russian River. And today, there's also a Bohemian Grove now on the Russian River where the Bohemian Club continues to have their summer celebrations. Luckily for us, they didn't like Muir Woods, so we got to become a park instead so everyone could enjoy it.
What a great and rich history this relatively small parcel of land has for America in many different respects. I want to thank Heather Booth, who's one of the rangers at Muir Woods National Monument, for joining us on the Wild Side News today. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you for having me.
We have everything to hope for if we will now commit to our future. Let's get this show off the road and onto the path to a future made possible for the generations to come by the wisdom that we possess. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again as we share the voice of the earth heard around the world on the Wild Side News.